This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of Doc and Jock. I am the Doc, John Macaroon. Joining me this week, my guy Adam, the Jock Strozinski. We got to figure it out. Did the DSP curse ruin the Red Wings, or was it that shitty patch that they decided to put on a storied jersey? One of the best uniforms in the NHL has been sullied for the name of dollars, and everyone's noticing that the Red Wings have sunken in the standings since Doc and Jock have praised the Red Wings, because they were on pace to potentially get mid-90s in points. But when you look at it, 1 week where you don't win, where you have a chance to secure 10 points and you secure zero, the Islanders have caught the Red Wings. And as we're recording, the Red Wings are not in the postseason. So there's panic in Hockey Town. We're going to break it all down. And it's free agency. Free agency frenzy has started all across the NFL. But are the Lions really in it? Or are they in it to basically look for their guys? We're going to talk all about the strategy that we're kind of seeing from Brad Holmes. And he's sticking to his guns. Because, unfortunately, we got to start with the Red Wings. Man, it has been literally, we've spent maybe six whole segments this past 12 months on the Red Wings. And finally, they started to show life. They were playing well. They got on a six-game win streak. You saw good goaltending. You saw a plethora of scoring. We started talking about optimism, potentially getting out of the first round. And then it just seemed like once they announced that stupid priority garbage patch on the jersey next to the winged wheel, it just seems like everything has gone downhill. Scoring has been erratic. Goaltending has been shoddy. You recognize that teams that you're supposed to beat, like Arizona, where basically the fans are 2-1 in your favor on the road, you don't get a W. And it's looking like, at this point, cuz, it's looking like a collapse. And I know teams can't make excuses and things like that. I know the absence of Dylan Larkin is a big deal. But you have scoring. You have a whole bunch of other guys. You have DeBrincat and Kane and JT Compher and other guys as well. Kopp. You would have assumed that some leadership would have stepped up. What the hell has happened to these Red Wings?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it there. I think the loss of Dylan Larkin has played a bit of a part in this. And to be honest with you, after that, I'm not really sure what has gone wrong. It's like the scoring has dried up. And look, hockey is a game where sometimes you go on these streaks and you can't find the back of the net. I think some of that, like I said, has to do a little bit with Dylan Larkin not being there. Sometimes goalie play comes in waves, and sometimes they're hot, sometimes they're not. I think with what you've got going on with Alex Lyon is a guy who really hasn't been leaned on like this, a guy who really hasn't had this much pressure, had to carry a team like he has to do now. So maybe you're seeing some unstable footing in between the pipes right now. I think it could be a lot of things. It is weird to see a team be that white hot and then be this ice cold. The thing about it is, schedule sets up for them. We talked about this last week with the schedule setting up for them, and they should have been able to take advantage. The one game that really sticks out to me is the Arizona game. Like, you were dreadful. You were pathetic. You know, you lost 4-0 and you were manhandled, basically. To me, this team has to figure a couple of things out. They've got to get their line pairings right. I expect to see a couple of players called up to try to help balance out some of the scoring, try to kind of find somebody who can put pucks in the net like Dylan Larkin. I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm just saying you can get a guy who comes up and he's white hot for a couple of games and he can help get you over this hump, help get you to break through. But I think as fans of the Detroit Red Wings, I think a large part maybe underestimated the value of Dylan Larkin on this team. Me and you have been hypercritical of Dylan Larkin over the course of his career. I don't think either one of us necessarily value a ton of what he brings to the table. We expect more than what we get. I think you and I both believe that on a Stanley Cup caliber team, he might be your second line center. He is probably destined to be a very good third line center. On this team, he's your number one center. He's your guy. So I feel like he gets played out of position a little bit. Granted, he's got some really good line mates in Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat, and they can make you look really, really good. All that being said, I think maybe we undervalue him. Maybe that's what you're seeing. This is another stretch of games where you don't have your captain. This is another stretch of games where you are losing games. And this is another stretch of games where you're not just losing. You're kind of getting embarrassed in these games. You know, you go back to you go back to when this losing streak started back on Thursday, February 29th against the Islanders. Gave up 5 goals. You turn around, you get manhandled by Florida. Larkin goes out. You then turn around, you take on Colorado, you give up 7. You then go to Arizona, and you just get mollywopped 4-0. And then you take on Vegas, and you lose 5-3. Vegas is a pretty decent team. So you are giving up goals in bunches, and you don't have the players that are putting the puck in the net right now. So I think it is one of those things where maybe us as fans didn't necessarily see how important a guy like Dylan Larkin is to this team and what he means, not just on the offensive side, but on the defensive side. Do you think Dylan Larkin has been underestimated in this town and fans have maybe taken him a little bit for granted? And now you're starting to see that with this losing streak that the Red Wings are desperate to break.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, Dylan Larkin has emerged. And I think that once he earned his contract, you saw his game also kind of go to the next level. I think that, you know, look, he's a good player. It's just the expectation is that he's a 40-goal scorer and can lead a team, and sometimes we don't get to see that because, you know, in the NHL, it's tough. Teams are much more willing to take someone out and be more physical with Dylan Larkin because of the fact the Wings don't have the physical presence on defense. And you recognize, too, that sometimes we're spoiled by guys like Yzerman and leaders that kind of were able to lift everybody around them. Whereas Dylan Larkin, more of the silent type, just lets his play do the talking. And you recognize, too, that, you know, his game, look, I just think that, you know, a guy that's not as flashy maybe doesn't get as much attention. But he is a good player. He's a really solid player. I think for the value of what the Wings are getting for what they're paying him, it's a fair deal. But now you're seeing it, which is really unfortunate, is that, you know, was this team really built on one guy? And if he goes down, then the season's done. It's kind of weird the way in which the last 2 years there's been a collapse. And it really goes to show you. And I'm just really confused. It's going to really tie into our talk later on with Brad Holmes. Steve Yzerman, I don't think you needed to go out there and get 5 guys, but you needed to make a move. I just think that when you go out there, and which I don't know if you saw the game against Vegas, because it was against the champs, so you definitely pay attention. They call up Berggren, right? And he makes a critical turnover in the game. And you're like, no, he has a critical turnover that led to a goal that was a momentum shifter. And that's right after we posted a video on our podcast where Steve on Twitter at Detroit Podcast, where Yzerman's like, I didn't really feel the force to get a player because we got guys that I'm comfortable with. And then the guy that you called up has a turnover and has a costly mistake. And it just goes to show you, look, I think these GMs, they aren't feeling the pressure from these owners to, like, get this shit done, like, now. Like, one, you don't need to, you just need one impactful move to kind of, like, a spark move. And I don't think getting guys from the minors is that move. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if and sometimes I don't know if these general managers understand, like, psychology and understand the, like, the mood of a team. And I think Yzerman would understand it better than anybody. He's seen what – do you remember, cuz, when Shanahan showed up in Detroit? It was a momentum shifter. When Rasheed Wallace showed up in the pit for the Pistons, it was a momentum shifter. When DeBrincat showed up, it was a momentum shifter. Sometimes just the change, just sometimes saying, okay, Yzerman means business. The message that you sent was, whatever. We're good. We make it. It's only been 5 years. Like, you got paying customers. There is a threshold of rebuilds, and it's around 4 or 5 years. This is ridiculous. The team should be a postseason team and should be doing things. And to have this happen, where you collapse and don't even go 500 in a week. It's pretty embarrassing. But the schedule kind of eases up a little bit. More home games. You start playing these teams that you played last week, this week at LCA. So I expect them to rebound because this is something where I say if you're a true leader in Dylan Larkin, you got to tell yourself, hey, I need a team that is going to be built to where, hey, if we have an injury or two, we're not going to collapse. And I think this year, clearly it shows. Goaltending has to be a priority, and defense has to step up because the defense, as of late, there's bad defense, and then there's atrocious defense. It literally looks like rec league, where they're just letting guys skate through the zone, through the neutral zone, no pressure, no attack, no poke checks. I'm like, what is this? This looks like what it looks like when you go and watch a high school game, and the kids are just allowed to kind of freely skate. You got to get in there and handle business. And I think Steve Yzerman missed a key opportunity to improve this team. And I know the cost was high. My God, these GMs were willing to spend first-round picks for these talents. But I just think that if you're a quality GM, you figure it out and you bring talent that can help spark your hockey club.
Yeah, I think the big critical mistake here was maybe not making a move sooner. As you got to the deadline and then you were at the deadline, it was unreal what it cost to make a move. People were doling out so many future assets and trading away so much depth to just get a guy on your roster. It was crazy. So, look, I'm not going to fault Steve Yzerman because the price was absolutely erratic at the trade deadline. But I think more to your point about him missing a prime spot, because I agree with you 100%. I think he needed to be ahead of that curve. I think he needed to be ahead of that rush. Like, you needed to know what teams were asking, what teams were looking for when you were calling around asking about guys. You needed to be out in front of this by at least a week. And you look at when Larkin goes down, at that moment in time, you really need to start pressing it. You really need to start making a couple of phone calls. It's going to be interesting to see what this team does as the season starts to inch towards the playoffs, as we start to creep towards the playoffs, because you've got guys you want to bring up. You've got guys who it's, you know, by all accounts in Grand Rapids, they deserve to be called up. And you've got guys here on the main roster, you kind of touched on it, turning the puck over, not playing good defense. You got guys who are basically just kind of taking up roster spots and aren't even playing. And you've got some young talent who wants to get up. So you're going to have to get creative. You're going to have to move some guys around. It'll be interesting to see if and how they kind of manage this roster as we approach the playoffs and as we get into that playoff hockey mode, which in all honesty, the Detroit Red Wings really should be in playoff mode right now. You know, you sit there and you lose 5-6 games in a row. You really have to start figuring some stuff out. You really have to get on your horse, and you've got to start grinding. And I think you're right. As we go into the offseason this year, goaltending has to get figured out. Like, they've got to figure this out. Is it Alex Lyon? I think we all believe Ville Husso is not the answer. Reimer is at this point just kind of a glorified backup. You got to figure out what's going on with Sebastian Kosa. Is he going to be able to come up, and is he going to be able to give you games, or is he just going to be a guy like I think Chris Osgood was in the minor league system for so long. Or no, Jimmy Howard. It was Jimmy Howard. Jimmy Howard was in that minor league system for so long. It felt like forever. And then he finally gets called up, and he was an average goaltender. So, like, what do you have going on? Are you going to be able to put some of these draft classes together that have been rated so highly? And are you going to be able to get some talent and squeeze some stuff out of these guys and help you win? And I think more to a point that you were making, this team can't be built where one guy goes down and then it's all of a sudden panic in hockey town, right? You lose Dylan Larkin, and now everything kind of goes out the window. You got guys playing out of position. You got guys not playing the hardest. You got guys, you know, not doing what they're supposed to do and basically doing their job. You can't have that. If you have an injury similar to the Detroit Lions, next man up, right? It's got to be that next man up mentality. You got to clock in, you got to go to work, and you got to get it done. And right now, the Detroit Red Wings just aren't getting it done. So it will be interesting. Look, we're approaching that point in the season where all these games are going to get much tighter. All the checking is going to be heavier. All of the skating is going to kind of slow down a little bit, and goaltending is going to become increasingly important. The playoffs are right there on the line, and with the way the Wings are playing right now, they don't get in. I think the Wings will kind of figure this out as we get towards the end of the season. We still have about a month or so left, right? We've got all of the rest of March, then we've got half of April. I think with the way the schedule shakes out, I think you'll get a healthy Larkin back. I think you'll be in a decent position where this team will eke into the playoffs. I am no longer as confident as I was a couple of weeks ago, where I thought for sure this team was making noise in the first round of the playoffs and we're going to go and be a hotly contested commodity in the second round of the playoffs. I think at this point, this team will get into the first round of the playoffs and they'll maybe win a game or two. And that's about it. I think that's as far as they get. So right now, a dramatic shift for me from a couple of weeks ago where I had this team making a ton of noise in the postseason to now I have them basically going out with a whimper. Has this losing streak and has this recent stretch of play and losing Larkin and the goaltending looking shaky, has this impacted your view on whether or not they make the playoffs? Are you still as firmly staunched in your belief that this team will get into the playoffs and this team will cause some havoc?
It's a major bummer. It's just like it's a situation in which you feel like, okay, Steve Yzerman kind of doesn't feel like they're cup contenders. He doesn't feel like there's a chance at a run. But in the NHL, it's so weird because you've seen it. I've seen it for years where the 8-1 upset is so common that it's almost commonplace, that the seeding really is just to showcase who has more games at home. But you've seen it where teams get on a hot streak from the lower spots, from the wild card spots. So it just sucks because, you know, this patience route, it's tough, man. It's tough. 6 years. That's a long time, man. That's a neighborhood of 400 podcast episodes. That is crazy to think about, that this Wings team, where we were used to them making the postseason year in, year out, making the playoffs, being a contender. Yeah, it's great. And like we've said before, if you're going to keep dragging it out, now the expectation has to be much higher, that if you're going to keep building, stockpiling talent, doing what you got to do, then the expectation is going to be multiple cups because you made us wait 6 years potentially. I think it's going to be much tougher because if you paid attention, they said Dylan Larkin could be gone up to the minimum was 2 weeks. So it could be much more time away for Dylan Larkin. There's no guarantee he comes back with 20 games left. You know, maybe he'll make a push. And it just, like I said, really sucks. The timing is just really unfortunate. You hope that everybody picks themselves up, gains some more confidence. Like I said, the Vegas loss, okay, you understand. But also at the same time, the play has fallen off. The quality, the crispness, the power play, everything has kind of just been like a power outage. And to see the way they played against Arizona, the Wings, even because on their bad day, should be able to beat Arizona. That's what shocked everybody on the road, knowing the desperation.
Dude, they play in like a high school arena. It's unreal. There's no reason that team should have gave them fits, and they gave them fits for the entire game.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Well, time to do some coaching. Get this team going. You know what? Maybe Lalonde needs to threaten to beat their ass like the general manager of the Pistons decided to do, because that was wild. It's a Sunday. You're expecting it to be slow. I was gearing up for NFL free agency, getting the notes together for the podcast for the week. All of a sudden, you see this video surfacing, and I'm like, I was telling my wife, I'm like, I can't even take a nap, go outside, hang with the family without some viral shit going on that I got to pay attention to. And I was like, what is this video? And first of all, outside of the words, I can't stop watching where Troy Weaver, for those that don't know, Sunday got heckled by a fan. And we don't know what happened beforehand. We don't know what clearly happened beforehand. But the part that makes me laugh over and over outside of the words is security comes over and Troy Weaver stands straight and points to the guy. That guy. And he points straight like he's proud of himself. And it's so funny to see. If you just watch that part, he points straight out and just goes, him. And it's so crazy to me when you hear people like the beat writers and professionals go, well, we don't know what was said to the man. Irregardless, my opinion is, when you see the video, Troy Weaver says, "You're lucky I don't beat your ass." Mm-hmm. And then the guy looks at him and goes, "Dude, you suck at your job," right to his face, which is the most amount of balls a fan can say. But I mean, I'm pretty sure Troy Weaver is well aware of what people think, but you don't get to see that level of interaction. And that's how Detroit is. You win.
That close to like in your face.
Yes, you win and you're toast of the town, never pay for a meal. You lose, you're a villain. And that's what I love about Detroit. And that's why I'm proud the fan said it. But in my opinion, I don't care, even if it was racial, even if it was incendiary, hostile, Troy Weaver, if that was the case, let's just say worst case scenario and the fan is vile, talking about his family, his kids, or whatever, you just remove yourself. 3 minutes later, security rolls up. You have that power. Like, understand who you are and what you're capable of and understand your public persona. And I'm of the opinion, right is right, wrong is wrong. We've become a society that makes far too many excuses and far too many, we need the context. No, you don't need the context. The fan was being an asshole. Wow. Mm-hmm. Alcohol could have been involved. Whatever could have been involved. The man could have been altered. You know, it's Detroit. You almost have to be high or altered to sit there. Whatever it is that was said, whatever it was said, you can be pissed. You can be mad. You don't threaten to beat the ass of your customers. You're the general manager of an NBA franchise that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. We're not out here doing hip hop videos. We're not out here shooting, you know, music videos. You're not out there in the back alley of LCA trying to beat up people. You're an individual that is of a leadership position. Maybe Isaiah Stewart has taken the leadership mantra from the GM, thugging and beating on people. It's not appropriate. It's just not. So I just think that clearly you're starting to probably see the beginning of the end for general manager Troy Weaver. It's aggressive behavior that is unbecoming of a man. Look, of course, his anger should be at the utmost high level where a fan is going to disrespect you. But at the same token, there has to be a reasonable amount of professionalism and decorum at your position. Bro, you're making millions of dollars. You're getting paid to take it. That's what you get paid to do. And second of all, why the hell are you sitting that close to the fans? Like, you're allowed as a general manager, sit in the suite, sit somewhere else. You don't sit with the commoners. What the hell are you doing? Because anybody would tell him, yo, they hate you. You are the lowest rated general manager in NBA history right now. Nobody likes you. The only thing we think of is Troy Weaver is synonymous with get fired. That's it. Troy Weaver, get fired. That's it until he does something. And the beat writers make excuses. They say, well, he has no power. He's not being able. Look, that's even worse. You're in a position where six people ahead of you don't let you do your job. Your ass better quit. What are you talking about? You're a puppet and you're going to sit there and take the check and act that way and derail a franchise? So right is right, wrong is wrong. And that's where people have become really, the lack of accountability at the highest level is crazy. And nothing happened. 4 days later, we're not hearing enough. I was shocked. No apology. At least a bogus graphic with a statement on behalf of the Pistons. We respect the fans. An unfortunate incident happened that is not representative of our franchise. We apologize, and we look forward to continuing our great relationship with our season ticket holders. Look, it took me 40 seconds to think about it. They didn't even do that. So if that's the model, in my mind, I'm not going down there. I'm not spending a single penny, and that's probably where I'm at. Of course, if it's free, give me three. But I am not going to watch the Pistons and pay attention to them until that dude is gone. Because what'd you think when you saw that? And is this rock bottom for the Pistons? And they've had a lot of them.
I laughed. I thought it was funny. I was like, this is amusing. For one, like you said, Troy Weaver, what are you doing? Your team is the shits. Why are you sitting with the fans? Why are you going to put yourself in a position where you could be talked to or accosted like that, right? You have 11 wins on the season. What are you doing? Don't do that. That's just a bonehead move. You're asking for trouble. That being said, he needs to be better, right? Like, I'm not condoning what the fan did. I think what the fan did was a little out of line. It was very brazen and very ballsy, and I applaud him for that. And he basically said what all of us are thinking. But as a fan, you just don't do that. And as a general manager, don't put yourself in that position. and don't behave that way. You said it perfectly. You have the ability to sit there, take a deep breath, get up, go find security, and then walk over to him. And just like you did, that guy right there, point at him. That guy right there is hurting my feelings and making fun of me. You can remove that guy. That's all you got to do. Instead, you go viral with a video where you're telling a fan that you're going to beat their ass. It really and truly, what you need to do is you need to walk into that locker room and all those boner-ass draft picks you picked up throughout the course of your time here, you need to get in their faces and tell them that you're going to beat their ass unless they get out there and play some damn basketball, because this team is awful. It is putrid. To me, it is one hilarious that this has transpired, this entire situation. Yeah, it is incredibly sad.
It's sad, and what's crazy is 3 of the 11 wins are against Charlotte. So that's the level of competition. It's you and Charlotte.
It's so bad, man. It's just like the Detroit Pistons are just absolute trash. The fact that guy was even there, what was that guy doing?
Right.
What do you have going on with your life where you're showing up to a Pistons game?
Wearing a Red Wings jersey. The curse continues.
Which was the best part. I was like, wait, hold on. Is Troy Weaver at a Red Wings game? Why is that guy wearing a Red Wings jersey?
Yeah. What was crazy was, did you notice the reaction of the fans? They're all like, he really talking like that to Troy Weaver?
That's the thing. That's what we don't know, right? It's like, what else kind of went on before all of that? You kind of get like the small window in time where Troy Weaver is having a reaction to this fan. And it sounds like this fan had said multiple things to him up until this point, and then finally just got under Troy Weaver's skin where he lost it. And it just, you're right. The fans are like, what is going on right now? Is this guy actually saying this to him?
Yeah, no.
You know?
If it was bad or racial, I think it would have come out, because the fans would have probably stood up and beat the guy's ass too if he was going like that. I think he's probably just cussing at Troy Weaver, probably like, this team sucked, this team's shitty. He probably used, man, how could you put together this shitty team? And, you know, and Troy's sitting there going, okay, I got it. And then you the third time, you know, he's like, I've had enough. But look, man, Detroit, we don't fuck around. That's just the way it is. It's not, and I think, you know, maybe these GMs, you know, they insulate themselves with a lot of people that tell them, it's okay, you know, it's going to be all right. You know, we'll get them next time. We'll have another opportunity, you know, another year, you know, and you got Tom Gores not doing anything and you don't get no accountability. Listen, the only thing that Pistons fans right now can hang their hat on is that when this season ends, you got to drop this guy like a bad habit. He is not a GM. He barely qualifies to me as a scout based on, number one, you took Cade Cunningham. Okay, really difficult there. He hasn't done anything creative. Okay, you picked up Asar Thompson. He defends. Okay, but one aspect of the game that he's got to develop is his offensive weapons. You can't just go with a team full of centers. You can't just go with a team full of reclamation projects and hope that it's going to be something that's going to be fruitful. And here's the thing that's most disappointing. If you're a fan of basketball, like most people are around here, Orlando, Houston have passed you by. And they started rebuilding the same time you did. I'd rather be a fan of Orlando right now than the Pistons, or a fan of Houston. You know, the young guy Green figured it out real quick. He grew up and became a man, has a girlfriend, you know? So you realize that these guys, these Pistons, cuz we got to pay attention to it. The seed's been planted. Cade Cunningham may bounce. He may look at this and be like, this is a mess. This is deflating. Let this team be
run. Well, dude, would you want to be here? Like, look at the way this organization is ran from the top. There's no way.
Yeah. From the top down, it's absolutely wild that this has gotten to this point. I mean, and what sucks is you got a name NBA coach, but it, you're not getting the version that people – it just feels like you got a version of a guy that took the money and was, like, not really into it. But at least he had showed some fire when the officials screwed him against the – when the Pistons played the Knicks. But other than that, you know, there hasn't just been too much to hang your hat on for the Pistons in any capacity. We look at this franchise and you go, okay, you got Cade, you got Ivy, you got Durin. That's 3 guys in 4 years. You got to replace him with 9 other dudes. And do you want this guy with caps? Because all Troy Weaver's, you know, tenure is going to be marked by when he gets fired. Troy Weaver, he created cap space and traded for reclamation projects. He created cap space and traded for reclamation projects. And he loves centers. That is the height of delinquency for the Pistons. And it's just funny at this point in time. It's a clown show. Everybody knows it. And it kind of bleeds into where you go, hey, if leadership at the top can't control themselves and can't express and prevent these kind of things from happening, then you kind of recognize, you know what, time for a reset, time for the professional level, the professionalism of that franchise to kind of step up. And I think it will. I mean, there's no way that you can ask your season ticket holders to support this nonsense. And if the fans buy more, then you're a sucker. Because like I said, I'm not buying, not paying attention to it. We'll just keep clowning around on the Pistons because that's what they've given us. That's it. They're, like I said, you know, 3 wins against Charlotte, 8 wins against the rest of the league. And it's just rock bottom, in my opinion, highlighted by a video of leadership threatening to beat the ass of customers. And good job. Like I said, I would have loved it if he would have been a bigger person, just sat down and bought the guy a beer, shook his head and sat down, or ignored him. Simplest thing is you ignore him. Let him keep talking. Let him keep chirping. But you go viral for all the wrong reasons. It's a team that's going to lose a lot of games, and it's going to be a situation which it's going to be a long time for the Pistons, I think, to rebuild. So it's, like I said, something that luckily, blip on the radar. It was a Sunday incident, and everybody else now for the past 4 days has turned their attention to free agency. And at the time of recording, the Lions have made 3 moves, 2 cornerbacks and a veteran defensive lineman. And look, I'm not saying this to be negative, not saying this to be incendiary or clickbait or whatever you guys say I do. I'm just being honest. Brad Holmes told us it was going to be boring, and it's kind of boring. And yep. It's not saying that it's bad, not saying it's not professional, not saying it's not an improvement, but it's fun because you do get to follow other teams. And the Eagles struggled, and look what they got to do. Whoa, they got Saquon. They added a defensive lineman. They made some moves. They made some splashes. It's fun. And you're watching it. It's a free agency frenzy, and you see Wilkins getting overpaid. And you're waiting and waiting, and everyone's like, Brad, it's Monday. Did you talk to anybody? Did you get to the office? Everybody's waiting. Hell, you could at least did the move at 12:10. Like, you didn't know you wanted a defensive lineman. You don't know Marcus Davenport. At least give it to us at 12:10, so we could debate it a lot longer. We all waited, and what happens is, cause it's kind of like that nice restaurant you go to, and you're excited, and then you realize, you know, you get there, it's 20-minute wait. You're like, okay, that's not bad. Ends up being a 30-minute wait, and then it takes another 10 minutes for the waitress to get there, and you're just getting annoyed, and you're like, ugh, the return is not as good, even if the steak is delicious, even if you get a discount or you get a free dessert from the manager who kisses your ass. You're just like, oh, I just want something to be easy and fun. Free agency for the Lions is not a frenzy. It's kind of like a routine dentist appointment where you go in and the dentist is like, good job, Mr. Macaroon. You're brushing your teeth. Good job. Make sure you keep them clean. You're all good. Thanks. Anything? Any advice? Nope. Keep them clean and come back in 6 months. And you're like, all right, what happened to the 2 nurses here that were assistant? That's why I come here. Oh, they left to another office in Birmingham. And you're like, fuck. I didn't come here to see you, dumbass. I came here to see them. All right, gotta go. And that's where it is with the Lions and free agency. It's just get the guys you need. It's professional. It's not fun. But you know what? The best way to look at it, bright side, is if you do follow the NFL and you do pay attention and sit at your screen, if you just expand your watch list and just highlight everybody else and the analysts, it's kind of fun to see what other teams did, especially the craziness with the Packers and jacking up Aaron Jones. I thought that was crazy for him to go then to Minnesota. So there's a lot to talk about not regarding the Lions, but it's okay. I just think that Brad Holmes is a pro. He doesn't want to spend. He doesn't want to splash. And he doesn't want to give us clicks. That's fine. We'll get our own. But we'll figure out our own way.
John, will do that but for why? Us
for this episode.
But why?
But it's fine.
But here's the,
right?
Here's the thing. But why? Because the salary cap doesn't matter. The salary cap is fictional, right? So he talks about saving money to pay guys on the back end, and he's got all these other guys he's got to sign. You have the Philadelphia Eagles who have gone out and going into the league year, they were over the cap. And then they went out and they spent a buttload of money bringing new guys in on Monday. They're telling you It's in your face. The salary cap doesn't matter. You can finagle numbers. You can figure things out. You can do whatever you want to do to sign whoever you want to sign. And yet the Detroit Lions continue to do what they're doing, going out, bringing in C and D-list free agents, putting them on a roster. Like, do you feel like the defensive line has gotten any better with the defensive ends that they brought in? I don't think so. I don't think it's any better. Marcus Davenport, the guy's hardly healthy to be on the fucking field. And then was it Matthias Betts? That's isn't that the guy that they got out of the Canadian Football League? I'm not sure what to expect out of that. I really and truly, I'm not really expecting a whole lot out of either one of those guys. And then you look at what they did as far as cornerbacks. You have an opportunity to go out and bring in arguably the best cornerback on the market. And instead, you're going to go grab a guy from the Las Vegas Raiders in Amik Robertson, and you're going to trade for the second cornerback over in Tampa Bay. The number one guy is Jamel Dean. That was the guy that you wanted last year. That was the guy that you should have signed last year. Instead, you ended up with Cam Sutton. Jamel Dean was the guy. Instead, you trade for Carlton Davis and you give up a third-round pick, which you have multiple of, but that could be used to help you move up in the draft this year. And in return, you get Carlton Davis and you get some Sixers. Like what? What are we doing here? I find it all to be puzzling. If you think this team has gotten better by going out and trading for Davis and bringing in Robertson, I don't think so. I disagree. I don't think Carlton Davis is anything great. I don't think Amik Robinson is anything great. I don't think Marcus Davenport is going to be healthy enough to even be on the field to contribute the way you want him to contribute. I feel like all of this is just kind of just doing things to do things, right? They're not impactful moves. This team, you deserve to have one impactful move. Detroit Lions fans, you deserve to have one impactful move. Go out there, sign a big name edge rusher. Go out there, get us an actual number one cornerback who you can sit there and play and you don't have to worry about him. You can shade the other side of the field because Cam Sutton plays on roller skates. Like, it's not hard, man. And look, Brad Holmes has done a great job. He deserves a ton of credit for everything he's done. But when it comes to free agency, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy who likes to shit in his own diaper and likes the smell of it more than Brad Holmes. He will keep receipts and tell you how good of a job he did signing this guy for a one-year deal, trading for this guy, and doing this. And you know what? It's not like they were monsterly impactful moves, and that's what's frustrating. I get it. You want to build through the draft. We all agree. That is smart. That is the thing to do. But you know what? This moment in time, you are a contender. You are going up against the likes of a Philadelphia who just spent a buttload in free agency to get their team better. You are going up against the likes of a Kansas City. You are going up against the likes of a San Francisco 49ers. You are going up against the likes of those upper echelon teams. And you're out here like, we're going to draft everybody and we're going to re-sign our own guys. Newsflash. You can't keep all of your own guys. It doesn't work that way. You have a very small window of time where you can actually win a Super Bowl. You're in it right now. You have cap space. You have money. Go spend it and get guys here who are going to help you take advantage of that small Super Bowl window that you have. There are guys out there who are willing to take your dollars, but you don't want to give them to them. Because you're like, no, we've got to squirrel some money away for next year or 2 years down the line. That doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't jive with me. The salary cap just went up exponentially. The salary cap continues to go up exponentially. Every year it goes up. Let's not act like we're losing money with the salary cap. The salary cap hasn't dipped in I can't tell you how long. It's been forever. So the way that you are operating as a general manager, you're basically operating with one hand tied behind your back. There's no reason to do that. Be smarter. be better. Go get guys who are going to impact this roster and impact games and take games over when this team is losing. When this team has a ball go off a helmet and ends up in a wide receiver's hands, go get me a guy who's going to be a world record. Go get me a guy who's going to go break a quarterback in half and then smear his blood on his face and say, give me some more. I want guys like that. Go get me that guy. You've got money. You have a checkbook. Go get those guys. I'm really frustrated, and I feel like Lions fans, you should be frustrated to watch how Brad Holmes is conducting himself again in another free agency.
But I'll say this.
Let's be 100% honest. His free agencies aren't very good. He does not hit home runs.
Right, but I'll say this. You know, he's not tying himself to long-term contracts. He likes guys, obviously, clearly, that are familiar with the coaching staff. And here's the thing. When you go out there and you get something right away, you're paying top dollar. So at the time that we're talking, Daniil Hunter's still on the market, Legarius Sneed's still on the market. And it's kind of like he ain't going to be, and if you check out our Twitter page, at Detroit Podcast, you saw my metaphor. He's not the guy that's going to be stampeding trying to get the TV for the deal. You know what I mean? He's going to wait. He's going to test the market. And he's not going – I think that he's kind of – in a way, he set his course, and it was successful. You can't argue it, you know, taking the team from where it was to the NFC Championship. But yes, I think the argument can be made that one more high-end player could be the factor that takes this team from the Final Four to standing at number one. And that's a very fair argument and respectable. But at the same token, he could also say, you know what? We could also do that again with four guys that we draft that we think could hit. You saw Jahmyr Gibbs, just how impactful he was. You saw Sam Laporta, how impactful he was, counted on in the postseason. If you get one cornerback, one defensive lineman on a rookie deal, now you have an opportunity where you're not risking too much. And I just don't think they want to pay Legarius Sneed $20 million a year. They want to see, okay, maybe if we wait a couple days and he starts feeling the pressure, maybe he'll come down to 18. Maybe he'll come down to the number that was kind of set by the latest. You know, they don't want to set the market with their deals on, and that's just the way it is. And I think we can argue, do we like it or not? And I think nobody likes it. It's not entertaining. It's not fun. But competitively, there is a real argument to be made, and we've said it. He's put his nuts on the table, and he said, this is how I believe we're going to sustain. This is how I believe we're going to win. And everybody else thinks differently. That's where you get the smartest guy in the room. But I'm kind of believing that, okay, you're not maybe not the smartest guy in the room, but you're a pretty darn smart guy, and you're kind of doing it in a way that's reasonable in free agency where you don't feel like you're handcuffed to anybody, and they're not going to pay Daniil Hunter $30 million. I think they want to get every deal reasonable, and because here's the thing, they're not bending on any of their asking things, which is they need to fit the system, they need to be affordable, they need to understand the coaching staff, and they need to fit the community grit culture in that locker room. And they're not going to budge if the player doesn't. And you look at it and you go, these two cornerbacks, they're not the best, but they're still an upgrade over what you had. So that's better. I think, Amik Robertson has a story that the Lions like, you know, really tough background, has faced adversity, and is a guy that's consistent, available. And you look at the Tampa Bay corner, they saw a guy that played their own offense and only gave up 30 yards and was like, whoa, this guy's competitive. This guy's a gamer. So they do believe in also having guys, and because I think maybe this is something you got to get used to. And this is why I'm used to it, because I saw it for the college team that I support. This is the Michigan State model, where they don't go out and get the five-star guy. This is the Michigan State model under D'Antonio. They didn't go out and get five-star dudes, but they whooped Michigan's ass, arguably having recruited lesser talent for a decade by coaching them up, having a mantra, busting their ass, and playing well. It got them all the way for the, you know, but unfortunately the argument is that, you know, when they got to face Alabama and they had the five stars, they got their ass beat. So, one, I do believe something could come. I still believe at this recording, it's only been 28 hours into free agency. There's still plenty of time from now till you guys hear this. There could be a move still, but in the end, I respect what you're saying. It doesn't lend to us believing, and that's, it's normal to be skeptical. This doesn't lend, these three moves don't lend us to believe that this is what would carry this team to the Super Bowl when you got the 49ers and the Eagles, who pretty much were a little bit more talented than you at first, and they're rebuilding and adding more talent. So we'll see. We'll see if this mantra works, because if it does, then basically Brad Holmes would have come in and basically killed free agency for fans of the Detroit Lions. It is boring. It is dull. But it's true. The Lions Super Bowl should be the draft. And that's how Brad Holmes has treated it, which is, hey, when the time comes and we're going to evaluate talent, I'll ask you this. Was the cost too much to trade? I would have just kept the third round pick and took it. I think the third round pick might have been better than the cornerback that you got. Just take a cornerback and
that's
take.
Same. Yep. Same. I think they gave up way too much.
Yeah, they gave up too much.
Here's the thing. Both the cornerbacks down in Tampa were available. There were reports that Jamel Dean was available. You could have went and got him, and it probably would have cost you the same thing. Yeah, he probably cost you a little bit more money, but he's better. He's a better player. I don't understand. My whole thing is you have these extra third round picks. These things are generally capital for you to take that late first round pick and move up somewhere into the middle of the first round. And you just attach one of those third round picks and you can go get a guy who you feel fits your team, who you feel is highly coveted. You've seen Brad Holmes do that a ton. He's done it basically every draft that he's been here. Now you're just going to give that stuff away for a guy who you could probably have selected with that same draft capital.
Okay, but
and he probably would turned out to be better.
Because what, like, if I'm saying,
what are you doing?
What if I'm saying, what if Brad Holmes, because you realize he made this move, what if he said, you know what? Guys ranked 1 through 100 don't fit our model. The guys that we like ranked 100 to 250, we see 6 guys that fit our model that we can get in the 6th round. That's what's crazy is that he believes that there are guys that he can take in the 6th round that he could use up to maybe get a 5th rounder that he believes in. That's the part that we're having a hard time believing, is that he thinks he can get better guys that fit later on in the draft.
It's frustrating, man. Like, as a Lions fan, it is incredibly frustrating for me to watch what goes on when free agency rolls around, because I feel like this team is so close. All you need to do is grab a piece here and a piece there. You don't need a lot. Like, I'm not asking for you to go out and turn your entire roster over. I'm asking for one or two pieces. I'm asking for a legit number one cornerback, or go get me an edge rusher to pair with Aiden that's going to cause havoc. Because I believe you can get the opposite in the draft. I think you can get guys in the draft that will contribute to this team. Maybe not necessarily next year, but in a year's time, they will contribute. And I feel like that is the smart way to build a team. You use free agency to supplement your drafts. You basically have an idea of what's going on in the draft, and you know what you need right now. So go get that guy, pay him some money. You have money. How often do we say that the Lions have money? Since Brad Holmes has come in, he's cleaned up the cap space, and we have money. Go spend it. Why are you saving it? To me, it just doesn't make sense, and it is incredibly frustrating to watch how he conducts his free agency. Because I'll be honest with you, John, I love what he does in the draft. He's a freaking draft ninja. I think he's great. And I think at this point in time, we don't necessarily have to question everything he does in the draft. That being said, I am very unimpressed with what he does in free agency. And I think he deserves to be questioned. I think he deserves to be taken to task with his free agency moves, because they underwhelm. And to be honest with you, sometimes they don't work out. And when he trades for guys, when he trades draft picks for guys, or he just trades pieces to get guys here, I have visions of Breshad Perriman. I have visions of future free agent moves, previous trades, previous free agent moves where he moved pieces around to get guys here and they just did not work out. It just didn't work. And it wasn't good for this team, and you wasted assets. So I think he deserves to be questioned when it comes to his free agent moves.
Which, if you, okay, let's rewind 72 hours per se. if these are the couple moves and you say, okay, it's a bunch of role players, you don't get Danielle Hunter, you don't get Wilkins, you don't get Legarius Sneed. Rewind it. Let's go back to Monday at 12 noon. What would have happened that would have been different, more impactful? What moves would you have made? I would have did it for the Miami Dolphins defensive tackle and possibly Legarius Sneed. I would have just spent the money and gone for it and see what would have happened.
Yeah, I think I'm in lockstep with you. I think Christian Wilkins would have been great. He's the defensive tackle for Miami, signed with the Las Vegas Raiders. Legarius Sneed is to me the guy, right? Like, it's going to cost you a second. I already told you I would give you a first for him. I know it's going to cost you a buttload of money. I get it. It's going to cost you a truckload and then somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 million. But you can line that guy up outside in one-on-one, in man coverage. He is a shutdown cornerback. So you know what that means? That means his side of the field, you don't have to worry about it. You play a bunch of nickel. You constantly have five defensive backs on the field. That means you could shift a guy over to help out Cam Sutton. You can have Cam Sutton play under. You can have a safety play over, and you can have your nickel play the slot, and you can have your other safety basically play free and just go provide extra coverage wherever something's breaking down at. And when you do that, it allows a guy like Aiden Hutchinson to get home. Aiden Hutchinson had a shit ton of pressures last year. You know what the problem was? He didn't start getting sacks until the end of the year. I expect him to take another step forward this year and to be more of a monster and be more of a headache. But you know what helps him do that? If he's got some time because the back end is holding up and doing their job, that way he can do his job. Legarius Sneed is, we both agree they are not going to go get him. We both agree that they're not going to pay him. Understand it. That is going to stick in my craw, and that is going to make me upset and going to make me mad forever and a day, because you could have had the best shutdown cornerback in the league and you're passing on him because you don't want to part with a second round pick, but you got no problem sending over a third round pick for some spare parts for cornerback. It just doesn't make sense to me. Like, you have the opportunity to get dramatically and exponentially better. Instead, you basically bunt and you say, nah, we'll take this guy. We'll give you a third round for it. What are we doing?
At Detroit Podcast, I posted the message, the theme too, I think that you're talking about too, which is, what's the point of having the 10th most cap space in the league if you're not going to use any of it? And I know Brad Holmes will say, well, we have our own free agents. We have CD Deuce and Josh Reynolds, and technically they're free agents as well, available for everybody. I look at it like this. You just need one name that's in the market, top 25 player, one guy that you give $15 to $20 million to, and you say, hey, handle your business. And that guy would have been Legarius Sneed. I think you could have finagled a deal. And maybe it still happens. But finagle the deal to get the guy. And I just feel like, you know, sometimes maybe in a negotiation, it's lockstep. Where Sneed's like, no, I'm not accepting any contract less than $21 million a year. I set the market for da-da-da. And you wait and see. Well, other news real fast. Cuz, is Kirk Cousins like the horse whisperer or something? How the hell did that dude get $100 million guaranteed coming off of an Achilles, 35 years old? I get it, though, when you dig deeper. Raheem Morris was there in Washington. They all love – this is a network of people who love each other, and they always take care of their own. And when Kirk Cousins was in Washington, he battled Raheem Morris's defense. But, man, cuz, come on. The extra year, the recruitment, I just do think that I just think that's the money that was thrown around was pretty crazy. Wilkins got overpaid, and you're hearing Danielle Hunter wants $30 million. You're seeing some numbers here. I mean, I'll say this. If Sam Darnold is getting $10 million when he's worth two, so, I just think that Brad Holmes is probably like, listen, I have a number. And I think Brad Holmes, and I went for a walk before we talked, and that's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, what would Brad – it feels like Brad Holmes, if you were to privately ask an agent, he probably – and I think fans, to bring it full circle, can relate to it. It's kind of like Steve Yzerman, where you call him and say, hey, are you willing to budge off your, only willing to pay $19 million? He's like, no. He's like, well, he'll take $19.5. And Brad's like, no, it's $19. Just like Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman's like to Dylan Larkin, you're going to take $8.5. That's what I want to give you. And Larkin's like, how about $8.75? He's like, no, I think it's $8.5. And he's like, okay. And then they just wait and wait. And I think that's how Brad Holmes is. He's got his number. The agent gets it. I feel like the conversations are short. He goes, what up? What up, Wesley? Yep. The number's still the same. We want to pay 17. Yep. We don't want to set the market. Okay. The guy calls back. Hey, do you want to do 17.25? Nope. It's 17. And the guy calls back. Hey, do you want to do 17.1? Nope. It's 17. And they won't budge. And I think that's what it is they have their number. They have their target. And if it doesn't go for them where he feels like it's a win, he doesn't do it. And he doesn't need to do it. Because right now, this year at least, he rides the wave of coming off of the NFC title game. But if he doesn't get to at least the same spot or to the Super Bowl in New Orleans, the criticism and the heat will come. And I think that's what will happen. It's fair to criticize and be skeptical that his model will work. But I'm opening the door to say, hey, if he's going to kill free agency and get wins, that's fine. Then we'll just heavily focus on the draft where that's where he focuses on and that's where we focused on in the past, and we'll see. But yes, the big thing is that free agency is boring as of this time, and it's a little frustrating, but I don't think it correlates to the lack of success. I think this football team has a good, strong chance of success, but I know you're talking about success at the highest levels. Does not making a splash in March affect what happens? We'll see. It did last year. We'll see if it happens again, and then he'll have to answer for it because the heat will be turned up because the expectations are very, very high for this football team. Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRstroz. Our hour has come up, man. Always when we fire up the microphones, that 60 minutes just flies by. But because it was a great podcast, nobody here is threatening to beat nobody's ass. If you like us, great. If you don't, we're not threatening nobody. We just take it. We joke around. And for those of you, I can reveal it here. The tweet I posted that read, sources close to the Pistons indicate that Troy Weaver is a big fan of Juwan Howard if Monty quits. That was fake. Okay? It was facetious. And I respect those. That was a smart test. And most of you passed it. Some of you are quite dumb that listen to this podcast. I get it. But I'm starting to wisen you up. I will start to reveal if these things are fake or not. That one was fake. I do not have Piston sources, okay? I'm a white Middle Eastern guy that covers the Lions, and I don't have sources with the Pistons. It was funny. Those that got the joke died laughing. They understood it. Those of you that didn't, the DSP text of the day, use your wise judgment to decipher if Miguel Cabrera texts me at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. Okay, it's entertainment. It's fun. I hope everybody's enjoyed getting a getting a glimpse of our humor. We enjoy being part of the sports community here in Detroit. Please understand our entertainment, our joy doing this, and we've been blessed to be able to do it. Our facetious asses, our dumbass nature has made it really fun to broadcast with my guy, Adam the Jock Strozinski. Let's go, cuz. Next week will be another episode of Doc and Jock, where hopefully Brad Holmes, maybe, after this is now in the can, we'll make that splash. I can't wait to talk to you next week, cuz.